The Big Scary Show is brought to you in part by Dark Imaginings, web design, creepy changing portraits, and much, much more. DarkImaginings.com.
For the deepest, darkest crypts, to the backwoods swamp where you hit the bottom, from the inside of your casket to the fears lodged deep inside your subconscious, it's time for the Big Scary Show.
Everyone, this is Scott Swenson from Scott Swenson Creative Development and A Scott in the Dark, and you're listening to The Big Scary Show.
Hi, this is Ira Hyden, the Wizard Master from Nightmare on Elm Street Part 3, and you are listening to The Big Scary Show.
Hi, this is Ken Sagos, Ken K from Nightmare on Elm Street. You're listening to The Big Scary Show.
How you doing? This is George Frangidakis from Immortal Masks. You're listening to The Big Scary Show.
Hey, this is Bruce Stan from The Reign of Terror, and you're listening to The Big Scary Show.
Hey, this is Christopher Jimenez with Sinful Celluloid, and you're listening to The Big Scary Show.
Hi, this is Carrie from Spectral Illusions, and you're listening to The Big Scary Show.
Hello, this is Trickster from Lake Elsinore, and you're listening to The Big Scary Show.
It's the dog days of summer, so I've surrounded myself with dogs to bring you the latest Big Scary Show, Episode 165. That's right, Karloff. Storm will be ranting about the finchening. I wonder what that is. Absolutely correct, Basil. Meathook Jim will be talking about the hidden secrets behind Disney's Haunted Mansion. Sounds like it's going to be fun. Oh, Vincent, you're too kind. He's saying that I'm going to be bringing you the deadline news plus interviews with Ira Hyden and Ken Sagos from Nightmare on Elm Street 3, The Dream Warriors. Correct, Elvira. Jerry Vane will be bringing a trio of spooky tunes for everyone still working on their haunts to get you in that fall and Halloween mood. Very good point, Rodan. The Roundtable of Terror will be talking about storytelling with your haunt and your actors with consultant Scott Swenson. It's very informative, and we hope you find it entertaining because, as a certain someone says, everyone loves a good story. That's right, Fibes. Veister will be talking about more Hammer film characters in his Haunted Vista. Good question, Elvis. Do we have a gruesome giveaway winner for the month of August? I guess you're just going to have to stay tuned for all this, plus more, here on episode 165 of The Big Scary Show. And ladies and gentlemen, I apologize in advance for the poor quality of the recording. We are experiencing some technical difficulties. And ladies and gentlemen, let's find out if you've been listening, at least to the last show, because it is time for the gruesome giveaway for the month of August, sponsored by Screamline Studios, our very good friends at ScreamlineStudios.com. Now, if you remember last show, we asked a question, we got a bunch of entries, we picked a random person, and I think we have them on the line. Random person, what is your name? Where are you located?
Kyle Miles, Omaha, Nebraska.
Way out there on the prairies there. And Kyle, you know how this works. I'm getting ready to ask you the question. Let's see if you know the answer. I do have a couple of legal questions I have to ask you. You understand, I hope. Question number one. Have we contacted you in any way, shape, or form other than to tell you when to call in? Fantastic. Question number two, have you tried to influence us in any way to pick you, either via bribes or offers of some kind of treasures?
No.
Excellent. Well, Kyle Miles of Omaha, Nebraska, let's see if I can remember the question because I don't have it in front of me right now. There are two Hammer films that Christopher Lee stars in, or Christopher Lee did not play the character of Dracula that he was normally famous for. What were those two Hammer films? And you would be absolutely correct. It was The Brides of Dracula and The Legend of the Seven Golden Vampires. Congratulations to Kyle Miles, Omaha, Nebraska. You are the August gruesome giveaway winner.
Thank you. Awesome.
Now, Kyle, do you work for a haunted attraction? You own a haunt? You do the home haunting? What do you do? Eight seasons working in haunted houses. Fantastic. Well, we'll make sure and send you a prize that you can probably use at that haunted house. What haunted house do you work at? Give it a plug.
I work at the Shadow's Edge Haunted House. You can find it on the website is theshadowsedge.com and on Facebook, The Shadow's Edge Haunted House.
Excellent. Facebook, look for The Shadow's Edge Haunted House, Omaha, Nebraska. Kyle, if you'll stay on the line for just a minute, we'll get some shipping information for you. And once again, congratulate Kyle Miles, Omaha, Nebraska, the August winner of the gruesome giveaway. Folks, if you didn't win this time, you might win again in September. Be sure to keep listening. Be sure to enter the contest. And of course, visit ScreamlineStudios.com because they sponsor the gruesome giveaway here on The Big Scary Show.
Broadcasting to you from the darkest reaches of the earth, this is A Haunt Minute. And now, with this week's commentary, Storm.
All right. So, something weird happened to me this week. As I got home, you know, I'm moving the recycling and trash bins out from the street. And I look up, and there it is. The Finchening.
The Finchening.
What is the Finchening? I don't know. There were, you know, a couple hundred finches just all around everywhere. Most of them looking down at me from my roof. Very unnerving, and then a whole bunch sitting in a tree and some on the power lines and stuff, and just sort of watching to see what I'm doing, and, you know, just being there, being the Finchening.
The Finchening.
I don't know, maybe, you know, they liked the birdseed I put out and want me to put out more. Maybe they didn't like the birdseed I didn't put out. They didn't attack me or anything. They didn't seem to be, you know, getting ready to chase me or anything. They were just there. They were just a very, very large, unnerving group of finches being the Finchening.
The Finchening.
But how awesome does that, you know, concept and name sound? The Finchening.
The Finchening.
And this is what we need to take away from it this week, folks. It's a time of year when you see a lot of people going, gee, what do I do with my haunt? What do I do with this scene? What do I do with that? And we even talk about it on the roundtable this week. Your inspiration, your ideas for what to do can come out of, you know, just everyday stuff and just making things scary by your own experience and stuff. You know, a bunch of finches? Not a good story, but the Finchening. Well, geez, something can happen there. Your mind can run wild with it. And the biggest thing is, it's just something that doesn't seem to belong, doesn't seem right, you know? giant group of, you know, birds or finches flying above me, no problem. You see that every once in a while over highways and stuff. Oh, must be eating bugs or something. You know? Normal bird behavior. But sitting there, staring at you, all in a line, looking down at you from the roof with the tiny little birdy beady eyes, that's the finching.
The finching.
So, you know, take that experience from it. And remember, you know, anything that unnerves you can be haunt, you know, inspiration. Anything that doesn't belong where it is, you know. Ooh, I need something on my haunted trail. Go with a rundown toy shop. What? Yes. What is one thing you wouldn't expect out in the woods? Oh, a toy shop. Especially a rundown creepy one that you gotta go through to get through a trail. Oh, yeah. Imagine the fun you could have with that. Why? Because it's something that doesn't belong somewhere. And now you've made it part of your haunt. It's scary, you know? So, get out there. You can have your own The Finching.
The Finching.
And until next time, keep every minute scary.
Tune in next episode for another Haunt Minute. And in the meantime, share your opinions on the Big Scary Show Facebook page and on Twitter at Big Scary Storm.
Hi, this is Josh Gates from Travel Channel's Expedition Unknown, reminding you to send all hate mail to storm@bigscaryshow.com.
The Finching.
Are you afraid this haunt season? Afraid of long lines of dissatisfied customers just at your ticket booth? Afraid of all the processing fees and hassle with credit cards? Are you afraid to make that jump into online ticketing? Well, take the leap. Ticket Leap. Ticket Leap will give you online options for your customer. Beautiful event pages to give every single ticketing option you have now and loads of possibility. Smart tools to spread the word, engage with your customers, and connect to social media with great, simple payment processing and the friendly customer support to go with it. Do things you haven't dreamed of. Hey, what's a selfie ticket? Check out TicketLeap.com. They're going to show you what to do. And no haunt's too big or too small for them to process. You're going to have a beautiful event page, even if you have a home haunt. Hey, they have options for free events that you may have. And what better way to collect donations for a community? Tickets under $5. The fee's only 25 cents. Find out what TicketLeap has to offer to you. TicketLeap.com.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, it is time for Deadline News here on The Big Scary Show with your host, me, Drew Badger, bringing you all the latest in the haunted house, Halloween, and horror industries. Hello, everybody. Drew Badger here. This is Deadline News for episode 165, and we're going to start off with some news from the Hell's Gate haunted attraction in Lockport, Illinois. Hell's Gate Haunted House is now hiring. If you enjoy the idea of scaring people for money, or bringing your artistic talents to the show, or if you're simply looking for an exciting life experience, we have a place for you. We are hiring over 150 paid positions. Actors, makeup artists, costumes, technicians, and hospitality crew are all needed. This October, join the zombie army and get ready for Rocktober. Chicagoland has been whispering about this multi-level mansion hidden in the woods, the house with the giant slide, and the haunt that was so good you could get your money back. Well, the legend has returned and you can be a part of history. Our interviews and auditions are just about getting to know you and having a good time. There's no need to prepare anything for the day. Just wear comfortable clothes and be ready to have fun. This is a first-come, first-serve event. We will interview you in the order you arrive for the day. Hell's Gate is also the only haunted house facility built and designed by haunters for haunters, and you're going to like the new digs. Auditions and interview dates are Friday, September 7th from 4 to 8 p.m., and Saturday, September 8th from noon to 4 p.m. The location? Hell's Gate, 3101 Canal Street in Lockport. For any other questions, visit hellsgate.com, facebook.com/hellsgatehauntedhouse, or email auditions@hellsgate.com. We have this news from the Demon's Gate Haunted Hayride in Dallas, Pennsylvania. We here at Demon's Gate would like to thank all who attended our first annual Zombie Prom on August 4th and look forward to making this event bigger and better. Please watch our Facebook page for more information and updates. And now, if you would like to be part of the Demon's Gate Haunted Hayride Horror Crew, we are looking forward to hearing from you so you can get your spooky on for the year. Join our crew and have some fun. Go to facebook.com/demonsgatekeeper33 for info or call or text Matt at 570-314-6034. We have a little news on the film Hocus Pocus and its 25th anniversary Blu-ray via bloodydisgusting.com. This year marks 25 years of the Halloween classic Hocus Pocus, and there's a lot to be excited about if you're a fan of the film. Not only is Spirit Halloween going to be carrying an exclusive wave of Sanderson Sisters pop vinyl toys, but an official sequel book was just released, and a 25th anniversary extravaganza is coming to Freeform in October. Additionally, we've just learned that Hocus Pocus is getting a special 25th anniversary Blu-ray this year, with Best Buy getting an exclusive steelbook based on the film's spellbook. The 25th anniversary edition will be released on September 4th. At this time, full release information is not yet available, but we'll keep you updated when we learn more. We have this hiring update from Scream Hollow in Smithville, Texas. It's a casting call for new scare actors. Do you have the burning desire to scare your friends, family, and coworkers? Are you a horror movie buff or have a unique talent? Perhaps you've already visited us for a scream or two, or 10. On August 25th from 10 a.m. to 10 p.m. and August 26th from 10 a.m. to 5 p.m., Scream Hollow Wicked Halloween Park will be holding open auditions for all aspiring scare actors and actresses age 16 or over with valid photo ID. Meet the crew and socialize with your new friends in fright. Chat with veteran cast members and learn how you too can be a top-notch monster. We'll also have pizza and soda on site for those who hunger for both food and fear. Those over the age of 21 are welcome to enjoy a beer with us as well. Please dress for the weather, and we'll see y'all very soon. We're located at 149 Split Rail Lane in Smithville. Get more information at screamhollow.com or their Facebook page, facebook.com/screamhollow.wickedhalloweenpark. We have this news from the Edge of Insanity haunted attraction in Kokomo, Indiana. Fall, aka the greatest season, is quickly approaching. Want to get involved with Kokomo's best charity haunt this year? Casting calls for actors will be September 2nd from 2 to 5 p.m. Makeup artist auditions on August 26th from 2 to 5 p.m. All new actors are required to attend at least one actor training session, which will be September 9th and September 16th from 2 to 5 p.m. If you're interested in volunteering as a crew member, including merchandise sales, tech crew, marketing, or photography, or if your business would like to partner with Edge of Insanity, please send us a message on our Facebook page. And you can get more information on that Facebook page at facebook.com/WeitelsEdgeofInsanity. That's W-E-I-T-L-E-S, Edge of Insanity. I apologize if I butchered that. We have this from the Medford Haunted House in Middle Island, New York. The Medford Haunted House is looking for volunteers for actors, building, and construction. This is our 20th season, so there are a lot of new exciting features coming. You must be 14 or older, but if you're under 18, you must have a parent present. Get more information at their Facebook page, facebook.com/Medford Haunted House. And finally, we have some hiring news from the Bates Motel in Glen Mills, Pennsylvania. For those in the Philadelphia, Delaware County area, it's that time again. We're recruiting makeup artists for the 2018 haunt season for the Bates Motel and Haunted Hayride. If you or a friend are interested in applying, we require all applicants bring or submit a portfolio for an interview. Your submitted portfolio can but does not have to be limited to makeup. Please feel free to include any drawings, paintings, or sculpting you've done outside of makeup. If you are submitting an all-makeup portfolio, please include theatrical makeup, character pieces, old age theatrical or realistic, monster, everybody loves zombies, as well as wounds or trauma. Please apply online at www.thebatesmotel.com. They look forward to hearing from all interested parties, and thank you. Remember, folks, you can get information on all these haunted houses and more at findahaunt.com. That's findahaunt.com. Remember, folks, if you have news in the haunted house, Halloween, or horror industries, and you want it on the show, email it to us, news@bigscaryshow.com, and we'll get it on the show. No news is too big or too small. This concludes this edition of the Big Scary Show's Deadline News.
Want to take your haunt to a new dimension of terror? Then let Dark Imaginings conjure up some ghoulish graphics and web design services for your home, haunt, or crypt. Since 2007, professional and home haunters alike have trusted our award-winning and dedicated skeleton crew to make their nightmares come true. Whether you need graphic design services, logos, websites, spooky visuals, or creepy changing portraits, we can help your business look its scary best. To see more of our products and services, drop by darkimaginings.com. Let us help you get ahead of your competition.
Hello, everybody. Drew Badger here in Charlotte, North Carolina. Days of the Dead. We're having a grand old time. They're having a whole Nightmare on Elm Street 3.
Dream Warriors. Woo-hoo.
Reunion here. Having a good time with the Wizard Master. Ira Hyden is sitting here next to me. How are you, sir?
I ain't going to dream no more. That's for sure. Everything is great. How are you?
I'm doing good. I've spoken to several of your fellow film alumni here and a few other actors and some vendors here. I saw these pictures here of Elvira, who is here as well. I did not realize you were in Elvira's movie Mistress of the Dark.
That's correct. I was Bo, one of the town kids in Elvira, Mistress of the Dark, who had a good time with her.
You couldn't have been more than about, what, 15 at that time?
I was rocking about 21.
Really? Oh, seriously?
Because the premiere for Elvira, Mistress of the Dark was at the Chinese Man Theater in L.A., and it was on my birthday, September 22nd, when I turned 22.
Oh, you know, no offense, man. You look 15, 16 in the movie, but I guess that's Hollywood, and that's where you're supposed to be.
I'll take that. Thank you very much.
So when people have been coming up to you talking about Nightmare on Elm Street 3, Dream Warriors, and all that kind of stuff, what are they asking you? What's the big question? What's the cool stuff that they're having you sign?
They're asking me, Dave, like, what did you think of the show? How did you like acting with Freddy Krueger? Are you still in touch with all the cast members? And the answer is yes. I had a great time. And, you know, a lot of people want to know also what I've done, how I got the part and things like that.
So how did you get the part? Was it through agency? Was it, hey, I know a guy that would be great for this role, or what?
It was actually through my manager. I had a great manager named Marilyn Sherman, and she put me up for the audition, and she knew Annette Benson, the casting director. And so through Annette, I got to read with her, and then they put me on tape, and then Chuck Russell watched the tape and liked it. And then I got called back, and I ended up getting the job. So it was pretty exciting.
Excellent. And I know that they put on these little reunions at conventions all over the place, whether it's Friday the 13th, Nightmare on Elm Street, all the franchises and stuff. Do you keep up with any of the fellow actors? I mean, you've got Ken Sagos over here. You've got several others in the area. You know, do you see these guys at other times, or is it pretty much you see them at conventions and things?
I see most of them at conventions. Rodney Eastman, though, I see from time to time, you know, we grab lunch. Same thing with Bradley Gregg. As far as, like, Jennifer and Heather and Penelope and Ken, It's mostly on the circuit.
Okay. So you're the, shall we say, wily old veteran of the convention circuit. A lot of people here, a couple people here, first-timers. What have you got coming up in the next, say, few months where people can meet you? Is there another Nightmare on Elm Street reunion coming up or anything
there
like that?
It is, actually. I'm glad you asked.
Oh, yes.
It's coming up in June, Days of the Dead again, and that is in Indianapolis. And also fun to plug, I do voice work on a TV show called Code Black.
Oh, nice.
Which is on CBS, Rob Lowe, starring Marsha Gay Harden, Luis Guzman. A lot of really good actors, so tell all the people out there in voice world to listen to that.
Being somebody who does voice work myself, I will certainly be listening to that now.
Perfect. I do a lot of the pains and coughs and patients and doctors.
How do you like doing voice work as opposed to quote-unquote regular acting?
I love it. It's so much fun. You know, you get that. You can really go crazy.
And you can do it in your pajamas, so you don't have to do all that makeup and that lines and the wardrobe and
exactly, all that good stuff.
For people wanting to know more about you, you know, you're coming to Days of the Dead in Indianapolis, which I believe is the 22nd through the 24th of June. Go to daysofthedead.com, check that out. A couple of other members of the Big Scary Show will be there. I'll tell them to stop by your table and say hello. But for people wanting more information on other con appearances, where they can get more information on Ira Hyden, all that good stuff, websites, social medias, how can they do that?
Well, you know, if they just went to Facebook and typed in the Ira Hyden page, they would see my page and they could like it. And on there, I update all the stuff, where I'm going to be, what's going on, if I'm working on stuff, projects, stuff like that. So,
is it you or is it your people handling the Facebook page?
It's my doppelganger.
Who, Bradley Gregg?
No, it's me. I actually do it, so I help. I do all the stuff on it. So,
excellent. So, okay, check out the, what's the name of it?
Ira Hyden fan page, or it's just the Ira Hyden page.
Excellent. So check out Ira Hyden on Facebook here. An absolute pleasure to have you here along with the rest of the cast of Nightmare on Elm Street 3, Dream Warriors. I'm not going to sing it again because I've embarrassed myself twice doing it already.
But we're the Dream Warriors. Ain't gonna dream no more.
Don Dokken has nothing on you, sir. Anyway, Ira Hyden, a pleasure to have you here on The Big Scary Show. We're here in Charlotte, North Carolina for Days of the Dead. My name is Drew Badger, also for The Big Scary Show at Days of the Dead, and we are out.
13 Pagan Holiday 13. She's dead on The Big Scary Show.
Lay a spell for fraud and decay of the curse. So he goes to it away. Are you looking for a comprehensive ticketing solution for your haunted attraction? HauntPay has the answer. We skip the features you don't need and focus on the ones you like, such as timed ticketing and repeat time slots, variable ticket types, bundle and combo tickets, social media discounts, and now featuring all-in-one options including managing your tickets online and at the door, as well as upselling and managing your merchandise and concessions with a comprehensive report on everything at the end of the night. Head on over to HauntPay.com and get started in 60 seconds for free.
Ladies and gentlemen, that music brings the return of the Round Table of Terror here to the Big Scary Show. It's been taking a little summer break, but we're back and we're having a good time. Now, folks, we've all been to that one haunted house, that one where you walk in and you're in a kitchen, then you're in a clown room, then suddenly you're in a maze, and suddenly you're in a laboratory, and back to a bedroom. What the heck's going on? It's a weird theme. Maybe a bad story. Maybe there's no backstory to your haunt. You know, when we have Dick Terhune on our show and talk about commercials, he always says everyone loves a good story. So we thought we'd talk about what makes a good story for a haunt, whether it's a single theme, whether it's a multi-theme. We've brought in somebody who knows a little bit about storytelling for a haunt. He was a creative director at Hallow Scream at Busch Gardens in Tampa, Florida, as well as ran a haunt called The Vault of Souls. It was kind of an interactive theater experience. Entertainment consultant Scott Swenson is with us. Scott, are you there?
I am here. And yes, let's tell some stories.
I think that would be fun. You're down in Tampa right now?
Yes, I am. Watching the weather roll through, as beautiful Florida it often does. We've been having thunderstorms all day. So if you hear rumbles in the background, it's not my stomach. I promise it's the weather.
Fantastic. And our usual bevy of hosts are here. Someone who's had a little bit of experience creating storylines for Trails of Terror up in Rhode Island, that would be Storm.
Greetings from Rhode Island, where the weather's pretty much like in Florida, which I was reminded of constantly this week as, you know, my former boss, Scary Larry, was up here.
Down in the Cincinnati area, home of the Dent Schoolhouse, one of the best storied theme, single-themed haunts I've ever been to, and the home of Meat Hook Jim.
That would be Cincinnati, not the Dent Schoolhouse.
And, that's correct.
And by the way, yeah, the round table's back from a summer break because you tried to surf on it last time in California.
Hey, you know, you do like the natives do. And somebody who has weaved some amazing instrumental tales on many of his different CDs, our very own hauntstrumentalist up in Columbus, Ohio, Jerry Vane.
And all you dumbasses thought I quit.
Ha!
But you got a new car out of it. Cool.
Not from our paychecks.
My name is Drew Badger. That's my story. I'm sticking to it. So, let's talk about Scott. You know, this time of year, you see lots of people on the forums on various, you know, boards and things online saying, hey, I want to do a haunt in 2019 or 2020 or something like that. Where do I begin? And a lot of people say it always begins with a good story. True? Not true? What do you do?
100% true. 100% true. You know, I've done several seminars and classes on this at various live shows and even on my own podcast. And the bottom line is good storytelling isn't just show business. It's good business. what storytelling does for you is it gives you a structure. It gives you a beginning, a middle, and an end. It helps dictate not only your content, but also your marketing, and if you want to get into merchandising, if you want to get into basic brand recognition. You have to tell a compelling story. You have to affect people on an emotional level. And obviously, in the haunt industry, the goal is to scare the crap out of people. And let's face it, the best way to scare somebody is to take them on a journey. I mean, this is true of all great haunt material, whether it's a live haunted attraction or scary stories, a Hitchcock film. You've got to take somebody from one place to another. I mean, Joe Jensen said that every haunt has exactly the same story. It's the journey to hell and back again. And I agree with him 100%. It's the nuances in that journey that make it interesting and make it successful.
Absolutely. You come up with something better than just, and I will tell you this, as a consultant myself, one of my very first clients, I asked them what the backstory of their haunt was, and they told me, quote, "Monsters have taken over our haunted house," unquote. Now, granted, his haunted house was chock full of monsters, but I don't think you can really build a really good story off that.
No, it's right? Honestly, it's like walking through a trade show or a showroom floor. You know, when I first did my very first seminar that I did on storytelling, the subtitle was "Where the hell did that clown come from?" It was all about, because everybody wants to throw in a clown or the cool thing they see at the Transworld shows or the cool thing they see at HauntCon or whatever. And, you know, they want to, like, lift it and stick it in there and go, this is great. And what ends up happening is it throws people so completely off. You know, when it comes, you mentioned backstory. There is a part of the storytelling process that the guests may never, ever see. And that is okay. It gives your actors something to play. It gives your designers something to, you know, work off of. It helps, like I said, it kind of helps dictate where you're going with your story. I think that you know, when you've got a really strong backstory, or what I refer to as show Bible or venue flow, what you've done is you've created the map that is going to lead you from nowhere to success.
Interesting. Does that also apply to all the actors and everything like that? Obviously, if you're working a drop panel, you don't necessarily need a huge bit of character development. But all of us on the show have acted at various times. And, you know, the question we're always invariably asked is, what are you supposed to be? Right. And a lot of times you don't have an answer because you were never given an answer. Other times you were told, create one. Other times you may have something elaborate.
Well, in any haunt that I've ever worked on, or any haunt that I've ever been affiliated with, and again, a lot of them are theme park or corporate-ish haunts, but every actor knew exactly what their backstory is. You know, you're right. When you have a drop panel, it's basically just startle the crap out of somebody. But at the very least, you have to know where you fit within the overall story. What has happened just before you? What is going to happen just after you? And where you fit. You know, when a drop door hits, if you don't have a pre-recorded audio trigger, which I've done that a lot as well just to save actors' voices, but if you don't, what you say, even if it's something as startling as go or help or, you know, whatever, it has to fit within the overall story arc. Because, you know, if you have a drop door in the middle of a mortuary and someone pops out and says, I'm going to drink your blood. Why? We're in a mortuary. You know, we've never mentioned vampires. It has absolutely nothing to do with the storyline. And it takes people completely out of the experience. It makes them go, that is an actor who doesn't know what they're doing. Or at least that's what it does for me. So, you know, no matter how large or small your performance is within the overall experience, you got to know at least where you fit in, you know, and it gives you... A story gives you a jumping off point, gives you something to make what you're doing not just drop the door, scream, close the door, drop the door, scream, close the door. Because actors who do that last about two nights, and then they've either lost their voice or lost interest. So if you've got a story, at least they've got something to play. They've got something to keep them interested and involved. It doesn't have to be complex, but it's got to be something.
Sure. Now, we mentioned at the beginning you were the, I guess, the director of the Vault of Souls, which when you explained that to me, that has to be one of the most interactive, immersive things I've ever heard. Can you briefly tell us what the Vault of Souls was in Tampa?
Sure. The Vault of Souls are what we referred to as Elegant Fear. Basically, it took place in a 1923 bank building, which had been beautifully restored. The first room was a three-story white marble open atrium. So we decided to hold a cocktail party. In lieu of a queue, we did a cocktail party. And when guests were called, they would then proceed into what I referred to as the second act of the experience. It was a completely immersive space that was in the basement underneath this building. And talk about a dream. This basement had not been touched since the late 50s, early 60s. So it was parts of it were dilapidated. Obviously, we made it all completely safe, but I didn't have to do a whole lot of theming because it was already pretty much done. And our storyline was such, it was actually based on a quote from the original bank president. And I don't remember, I'm paraphrasing the quote a little bit, but he basically said, "We will offer our guests things that have never been offered before." And since it opened in the 20s, we decided to make it so that not only was this bank holding money and valuables, but after their clients died, it would actually hold their souls in abeyance. And so if they were concerned that their afterlife would not be particularly pleasant. So it was sort of like a vault that became purgatory for these people who passed away in the 1920s. And when guests went downstairs, they were given a neutral white face mask and told they could not speak. There was no pathway. So it was a 15,000 square foot experience that guests explored on their own. They were encouraged to pick things up, to read things. If there was a padlock or a key, see if they could find which key went into which padlock. There are some rooms you wouldn't get in unless the spirit who lived there invited you in. So it was completely immersive. Everybody came out of there with their own understanding of what the overall story was and how the characters worked together. And then when they finished, they emerged into a 1920s speakeasy, which had flappers and music and another cap for the night. So it was a great story arc of starting off in elegance, going into this realm of uncertainty, dealing with these echoes from the past, and then coming up into a great big 1920s party.
And I'm guessing no clowns.
It's funny that you say that. We had one clown who was actually a parkour artist, and he was all in white and basically a Poirot clown who was part of the cocktail party. So he would come out and occasionally serve drinks. Because Tampa does have some circus history. He was one of the spirits that got trapped in the building. None of the people who worked in the cocktail party ever acknowledged that he was there, but only the guests could quote unquote see him.
Holy crap. That's cool. That's really cool.
Thank you. We had a blast doing it. I will give credit where credit is due. The Wilson Company, which is the company that owns the building and actually the entire city block, came to me the week after I left Busch Gardens and said, "We've wanted to do a Halloween event, but we wanted to wait until you were available to do it." So they were the ones who completely funded the whole thing and brought me on and gave me incredible creative control, which I shall always, always, always be grateful for. And honestly, we'd still be doing it, except they just purchased another city block in downtown Tampa, which they are revitalizing. And they said, "Hold on to your ideas, Scott. We want to do this again, but in a new location." So sometime in the future, maybe here in Tampa, we'll get another Halloween immersive theater piece.
That's fantastic. I just want to know how many times you had to chase Geraldo Rivera away.
Oh, God.
Okay, so what is actually what's really funny, there is a in the basement, because there's parts of that basement that we don't know what the hell was going on. I mean, it had its original vault, which the door itself was 18 tons. So, I mean, I couldn't have built Scenic like that. I had this incredible playground down there. But one of the walls had clearly been broken into and then bricked over.
Oh, fantastic.
So
and we still don't know. We actually did a when we were doing our ground plan, we actually did a sonic survey of the whole basement. And according to that, there was an opening behind that walled off wall, but we still don't know what's back there. So who knows? We may need to call Geraldo.
That's Jimmy Hoffa's little brother's mother.
Badger's personality.
Yeah, thank you.
Shots fired.
Now, one of the interesting things with storytelling in, you know, it, a lot of it comes to how people, you know, explain your haunt and stuff to it. But I've seen so many haunts do this, too. And it's literally the zipper face makeup of haunt, you know, stories is it's such and such so-and-so gone bad. that one drives me nuts. I mean, it's like, you see haunts and you got to have this middle ground because either things are too simple, it's a hospital gone bad, or I've seen haunts go into these incredibly complex, I think I'm Stephen King storytelling, and people come out of there confused. It's pretty cool, but I have no idea what the guy in the black leather was at the end of it.
Right. I agree completely. You have to recognize that the audience for these haunts is very broad. So you have to have enough storyline so that people understand what the beginning, the middle, and the end is. I mean, storytelling is not really brain surgery. You have to remember it has three important parts. It has exposition, a series of incidents that raise the importance or the emotional content, and then some sort of finale, and then some sort of denouement, something that brings you back into the world of reality. So you have to have at least those basic pieces. Now, if you want to go ahead and add detail, that's great, but the detail cannot be as important as the big structural pieces. Because I agree with you. I've gone to some haunts where I'm going, who the hell is that? And why are they here? Did you just find a really cool mask that you liked at a trade show? You know, it's... You have to, if you have enough detail, it will get the people who really like to dig in, which I call the sneezers, by the way. They're the ones who spread the virus of your brand. So when you get those people who are total haunt geeks and they can get in there and dive into, did you see this little Easter egg that suggests something from a previous haunt? Or like in my haunts, and yes, I will tell this tale. I've never really told this before. In all of my haunts, there's always a rabbit. There's always a rabbit somewhere in every haunt I ever design. That's because I was born in the year of the rabbit. So that is like a signature that I put into every single haunt. So if you ever come to one of my haunts, keep an eye out for the rabbit.
That's fantastic.
And that's such a fun thing to do when you're getting together in a group and you know, working on your story or trying to come up with ideas. We, you know, being in New England, especially Rhode Island, we would always have a little something of Lovecraft someplace, you know, whether it be our Miskatonic graveyard. And we did a hayride, and we would change the theme every year. Now, the big selling point on our hayride is the audio was on the hayride itself, and we had a full audio story that went along with the hayride. So we would literally have to come up with this 30-minute short story and cram it into what we had for sets and what we could do here and there. And we did do a very Lovecraftian-type tale one year, which was really fantastic. A little heady for some of the audience, but it was fun to do, and the actors really got into some of those scenes.
That sounds great. That sounds like so much fun. But I mean, here's an example. I had a client who hired me just to write a script, so I never actually saw this haunt. I just wrote the venue flow for it. But it was a theme park. They hired me, and they said, we want to do something that is Viking-themed. And I was like, okay, that's cool. What can we do there? And they said, but you can't get too heady or too esoteric, because if you do, our audience is going to be lost. All they know are basic monsters. So I dug in and found some really cool Viking mythology that has characters called berserkers. And berserkers basically are transformative warriors. So in other words, when things get really bad, they transform into either wolves or bears. And I said, it's a basic werewolf story that we're going to frame in the realm of Vikings. And the theme park was Northern United States. So there was a lot of Viking, apparently Viking blood still in Minnesota. But so they were like, this is ideal because it captures what our audience is going to understand and yet gives it enough nuance and enough strangeness to make it fresh and new. So it sounds like you did a great job by taking a Lovecraftian story and integrating it into a hayride. That sounds really neat.
Yeah, I think we called it Fright at Midnight, and each scene was clocking down. We'd always have a different audio cue for the actors that the hayride was about to move. You know, this was mainly a safety device, but you could play along with it, and it was a chiming clock, a big, your big clock tower thing. And as we got to midnight, and it told the story, and the demons came to reclaim the guy for, the crimes and stuff he had done with the rest of the hayride. But yeah, no, our general manager had really get the flow of it, and he is a musician by trade too, so having that audio base to work with helped us tell our stories. And really, when you hit it's very hard when you hit those brick walls creatively, even when you're in the mid build and mid figuring out, you're like, I got this concept, I got this part of my story, I can't get them to mesh correctly.
Yeah, I that's why I think coming up with the full story as the very first thing is it's essential to the way I work. I'm not going to say it's the only way to do it. You talk to 10 different people who work in the haunt industry, they'll have 10 different processes. But for me, I need to have the full story, beginning, middle, and end, because then when I hit those brick walls, I may not know how to get over the hump, but at least I know where I need to get to make the next part of the story work. So for me, it's like I said, it's just a roadmap. One of the examples that I used at it was called the Haunt Journal back then, but now it's Seasonal Entertainment Source. But Haunt Journal Magazine, when they did their leadership symposium, not this year, but the year before, they were talking about storytelling. And one of the examples I used is I said, look, when you come down on Christmas morning and you see the most beautifully decorated tree, what you talk about are the ornaments, and you talk about the lights, and you talk about the tinsel. But if it didn't have the tree itself, no one says, oh, what a great evergreen. If it didn't have the tree itself, you'd have a box of ornaments. The tree is the story. It's what holds all of the cool things in place and makes them work together.
And while we ponder that metaphor, I want to remind you, you are listening to the Roundtable of Terror here on The Big Scary Show. We're going to take a real quick break, and we'll be right back with our guest, Scott Swenson.
In 1897, Dr. Alexander Hammond arrived at an institution for the criminally insane, only to discover the unsolved murders of several guards.
Drivers, where are we?
Jerry Vane takes you into Black Moon Asylum, a twisted abyss of torment, madness, and the horrifying mystery of Patient 292.
Time for your medication.
Black Moon Asylum, a symphonic journey into darkness from hauntstrumentalist Jerry Vane. Download Black Moon Asylum at jerryvane.com, iTunes, cdbaby.com, Amazon MP3, and your favorite download site.
And we're back to the Roundtable of Terror with our very special guest, Scott Swenson, down in Tampa, Florida, talking about storytelling for your haunt, for your characters, our usual bevy of gahos. And I'm actually going to throw this question out to the hauntstrumentalist Jerry Vane. We're talking storytelling. Jerry, the last few CDs you've had have been kind of centrally themed. And how did you come up with the concept of the story for your CDs? And how did you weave all the different songs into creating, as Scott would say, a beginning, a middle, and an end?
A lot of it was basically centered around the song titles. Once I got an idea of what theme I wanted to do for the album, so like in the case of Virus 308, for example, once I got an idea of where I wanted to go, I just started jotting down names, titles, and slowly started, looking at the titles and going, okay, how do I want to do this? Is this just going to be a collection of songs, or am I going to try to tell a story with the titles? And that's generally how it started. I started doing that actually with Damnation's Embrace. Tried it differently with Soul Collector, and that kind of worked, kind of didn't. People weren't really sure what exactly Soul Collector was about. But it was with The Attic when I decided to make it all-encompassing sonic, you know, oral experience, no breaks no dead silent spots like most albums have with tracks. That's when I decided that every album is going to have a theme and a loose storyline attached to it. And so it just kind of that's how I just kind of do it. Then with the songs, I would start looking. I would record the song, and they would be named track one, track two, track three. That's how they're listed on my, you know, when I record them. And I would start going through the songs and seeing which song spoke to which title. And then, but in the case of Black Moon Asylum, I literally recorded that album in order. I knew where I wanted to go. I had the titles written out. I knew exactly where I wanted to go and what I wanted to do with each track. So, I mean, that's part of the reason why it took 2 years to get that album done, is because I wanted to stick to how it flowed, excuse me, and give that storyline. And like we were talking earlier in the conversation, too many haunted attractions start with a theme. And yeah, okay, this is going to be cool. And then what the hell is, you know, why are we suddenly got bunnies running around inside a haunted asylum, you know, mausoleum? What the hell is this all about?
Because I wrote The Haunt. That's why.
Because it was the year of the bunny. In my case, it's the dawn of the jackass.
Oh, so, there you go.
So I wanted to make sure, you know, that's basically how to do it. Yeah, I want to keep the journey going. And the really good haunted attractions that have that storyline that connects from the moment you walk in to the moment you walk out, connects every room in sequence of how the story they want. That's kind of the inspiration that I took from to help how, you know, create the albums I work on. If that makes any sense.
It makes total sense to me, and I'm not a musician. I because a lot of the stuff that when I'm writing, you know, verbiage and plot line and narrative, so much of the stuff that I write, I think of it in musical terms anyway. I've actually written in like rests and pauses and staccatos and, you know, various and sundry musical nomenclature in my writing, because again, we're kind of doing the same thing. You want to take somebody on an emotional journey, and pacing and not so much pitch or tone, but certainly pacing and rhythm is really important to me when writing any sort of haunt.
Right. And so the same thing with writing music, you know, the room dictates how you want the feel to go. And in the case of with one of my records, the title will dictate, am I writing on guitar? Am I going to write on bass? Some of the songs I've written the entire song on playing a bass guitar. Or in the case of with Black Moon Asylum, piano. I found myself writing the songs on piano more than I was doing on guitar, because the piano I was writing from a cinematic scope rather than how many riffs can I throw into this track. I want to build this up. I want to create that feel. And that is the same thing with a room in a haunt. You want the room to speak to you. And to me, the room is the title of that piece, like a song title. You want that room, the room to create the title for that track and grow from there. And that's my story, and I'm sticking with it.
Jim, I want to say that I know you weren't working there at the time, I don't believe, but the first time I went to the Dent Schoolhouse was in 2008. And I have to say, and I still tell people, that year, with the exception of one room, it was the most amazingly single-themed haunted house I think I've ever been in. You know, I talk all the time about how much I love Netherworld, or I love 100 Acres Manor. But those places are, you know, you'll walk into this amazing room, and then you'll walk into this other amazing room that's completely different from the first room. And the rooms don't necessarily go together, but it's so amazing you don't care. But with the Dent Schoolhouse, it was you started off in the principal's office, and then you went to the classroom, and then you went to another classroom, and then you went to the wood shop, or you went to the auditorium and the cafeteria. And it was just amazing how that was put together. Did you have any creative input on any of that? I know you worked as the dean. I don't know if the dean was dean of the school or anything like that, but how did you work when you were at Dent?
Well, first of all, let me say that the trio of Josh Wells, Bud and Chuck Strauss really have an amazingly single-themed haunt, like you said. Josh's set design is really second to none and is completely immersive. I unfortunately did not have anything to do with the house itself. I had more to do with the attraction at the time out back, the secondary attraction, which at the time was called Detention Hall.
Right.
They did give me some creative freedom and asked for my input about the way the maze should flow and breaking certain lines of sight. And as far as the dean was the dean of the school. It was so well received. I wrote the entire backstory because I believe in writing a backstory for each and every character I have.
Absolutely.
I wrote the backstory, gave him a name, went back into, you know, years back, and he was the dean of the school. He was in charge of discipline. And you could see the dean roaming the queue line, making sure that somebody was going to get some of that discipline from his cattle prod, which was one of the Fright Prop's boomsticks. And you would also find him down at the detention hall for all the bad kids that we decided to keep in there as they tried to find their way out of the maze.
Now, Scott, have you designed single-themed haunts like that? Or, I mean, you know, without giving names or anything, do you know of, you know, I honestly don't know a better themed haunt than Dent Schoolhouse.
Well, it's exactly the same approach that we used to take for each individual haunt at Hollow Scream. You know, we would find our themes. You know, when I was required then to write anywhere from 3 to 5 new haunts per year. So it was depending on how many we were changing out, and the ones that, you know, some of them we were changing out completely, and others we were what I call serializing. In other words, taking the story to another level, changing the ending, changing some characters, whatever. But we always tried to create a linear experience, a linear storyline. You know, one of my absolute favorites was one of the first ones that I actually wrote for them, and maybe that's why it's one of my favorites. But it was called After Hours Club Muse, and the whole idea was it was inspired by a club that I'd been to in New Orleans that was a vampire club, and there was this one door that nobody went in except the people who knew exactly where they were going, and they'd walk through this unmarked door, and you'd never see them again. So that got my imagination going, and I created this punk club where people were being, if they got into the VIP area, they were being murdered and their body parts were harvested to create artwork. So with that basic concept, our linear storyline started out in front of the club with people waiting in line. As you went into the haunt, you got your hand stamped just like you would in a goth club. You entered into the bar, you went through the back area, sort of the break room, and then you went through this odd sort of series of cells where people were being held. And then you went into each of the artist's studios. One was taking people's flesh and mounting their tattoos, which we called the found art room. One was taking their bones and their teeth and making jewelry. One was draining their blood and painting with it. So it was that create one room that leads to the next, that leads to the next. Use your rooms to tell the story. And it sounds like that's exactly what Dent Schoolhouse does, which I think is great. That's the way I like to write, because I think, you know, as we've mentioned before, the story is the journey we're taking the guests on. And if one room logically leads to the next, then you're in great shape.
Do you get to travel during October at all to check out some haunts around the country?
You know, I sometimes, not a lot. You know, for the first 15 years of Hollow Scream, I very rarely got to leave Tampa. And then the Vault of Souls kicked in immediately after, and I just signed an agreement with a brand new haunt that will be taking place in Edmonton, Alberta, Canada this year, so I probably won't get a ton of time. I may as we get closer to Halloween itself. So later in October, I may actually be able to get out and check some out. But, you know, you mentioned Netherworld, for example. I mean, you know, Ben and Billy and that whole team are just amazing in what they do. And yes, they are kind of disjointed, but even there, they will find ways to mesh their story, to make the wacky shifts left and right somehow make sense. You know, I always tell people will come up to me and say, I can't afford to do something that is completely themed. I want to do a little of this and a little of that. And I said, great, just come up with a story that ties it all together. And the one I always recommend is do nightmares. Make sure that you start and end setting it up that you are going to have a nightmare, because nightmares go all over the place. There's no logical rhyme, no reason to them. But if you set up your audience as you're going into a nightmare, you can have those turns left and right. So, you know, as I get around and get to see more and more out there, I'm hoping that I will see people who will continue to embrace this idea of thematically packaging stuff into a story.
If you've ever seen one of Ben's press releases when they announced their themes for the upper and the lower haunt at the old location, I don't know how they're doing it at their new location this year. It is chock full of imagery and, you know, it's a great story. Both of their, you know, the upper room is this and the lower room is this, and here's what happened once upon a time, and here's what you're going to encounter and all this stuff. And you basically know what you're getting when you go in there. It's just a matter of how amazing their set design is to pull that whole thing together. And I love it when haunts do that. I don't see enough haunts out there actually announcing, this year we are bringing back Nightmares or The Demon Rises or Witch Hollow or something like that. You know, a lot of them, it's just like, well, let's just see what they do this year.
Yeah. Again, coming from theme park, you know, Howl-O Scream, we always used to have, because you have six haunts in one location, you've got to make certain that they're all different, that they're not just cookie cutters of each other. And, you know, for the 15 years that I was there, we worked very, very hard to make certain that we provided a broad spectrum. So we had to lead with that kind of stuff. Halloween Horror Nights does the same thing. It's like they've actually created an art form, I think, in releasing information. One of the interesting things that about Netherworld that I don't know whether a whole lot of people know, and hopefully Ben doesn't get mad at me for sharing this, but years ago, they actually, for one of their themes, started a web page that was about a local urban legend. It was in no way tied to the haunt.
But I remember that.
They started the web page about the Green Man, and it was, like I said, not affiliated with the haunt at all. It was something that people would find. So after they announced their theme, people could Google it, and they would say, oh, they'd get this website would come up, and people were going, oh my God, this is real. So to me, that's storytelling on a whole nother level. That's super smart and super deep. I love that.
Wow. Do you remember a haunt about 10 years ago? I believe it was in Maryland, called Goatman Hollow.
I know of it. I never got a chance to experience it.
Never got a chance to go either, but the former podcast that we're all affiliated with used to run stories about the legend of the Goatman on the show. As I don't know if it was a sponsorship package or anything like that, but I mean, it ran over the course of several episodes leading down to their opening night. You know, the legend of the Goat Man, and they would have like a detective story one year, or the next year would be something else. And that was an amazing way, I thought, to get your talent or your information out. And I'll tell you, I wanted to go to Goatman Hollow every year after hearing that thing. I never got a chance. But, you know, the story that they weaved on the podcast just made you just like, I got to get to Maryland. I got to go see this thing.
It was part of a sponsorship package that they did. Yeah, because I actually did the editing for the commercials.
That was a fantastic thing. And I suppose, you know, I don't think I've ever heard that mentioned on any other podcast or anything like that. You know, your 30-second radio ad can't really tell you much of a story. other than to tease you and send you to the website. But I thought that was brilliant marketing on their part.
Yeah, I think, you know, like I said earlier, I think that when you set out your story from the get-go, it gives you a blueprint for not only your all of the creative elements of your haunt, but also your marketing plan. And it gives you the opportunity to start integrating that story layer after layer after layer. So if you get a little bit in the radio ad, and if you're lucky enough to be able to do TV, you do a little bit more in the TV ad, and then you create a blog of one of the minor characters that's in the haunt who's observing everything, and they're sharing bits and pieces of the story. It creates this universe that people can live in. You know, Marvel and DC have done that. They've created these universes where characters cross over. Well, you can do the same thing in the haunt world on a much smaller scale, where you have characters go off on their own and tell their part of the story. You know, now that we've got the internet, we've got all these wonderful tools to add those layers relatively inexpensively. All you have to do is be incredibly creative and dedicate the time to it.
Guys, any questions? Looking at the clock here, we probably should start winding this down just a little bit.
Off the top of my head, no, but it's given me a lot of ideas as far as how to structure my project.
No, I did want to hit on, that aspect we all just talked about is, you know, you invest in the storytelling, you invest in how you're making this and that little extra into it, you know, that's well written. You might even have an editor look over it. You're not only helping, you know, your attraction and, you know, your guest experience of being a more immersive experience, but you're helping to let your marketing write itself. You know, you're giving that unique points in those marketing things that really jump out at it. And, you know, that pays dividends in the end.
Absolutely. And to separate marketing from product makes absolutely no sense at all. I mean, great marketing, you know, we talk about the importance of a first impression when you deal with pretty much any product. And the first impression of everybody's haunt isn't when they walk in the door. It's when they see the first ad or hear the first mention of it on a podcast somewhere. And that needs to fuel the experience. Then the experience needs to fuel those people talking about the experience, because let's face it, word of mouth is by far the best form of marketing. So by having a cohesive, coherent, rich story that starts in the marketing and ends after people have gone through the event and are talking about it online, that's the power of great storytelling.
And it helps to answer the biggest question you get from all your potential customers. The single most asked question for any haunt, is it scary? Well, the fact is, if you go to tell a story and you're about to tell a scary story, the person listening knows it's a scary story. They don't even have to ask. They go, oh, this is not going to end well. The tone and how this sets up, you know that this is going to be a scary story. So if you have that story there and you can give that idea out, people aren't asking, is it scary? They're like, is this too scary for me?
Right, right. And if they do say it's too scary for them, that is the best marketing you could possibly have.
What, Scott, just, as we're wrapping up, have there been times in your history of writing it or seeing other haunts where you had to pull something out of the fire? Something was about to be a big failure and you either had to fix it, or on the other hand, it was something that you didn't think would, you know, resonate as well as it ended up doing during the season?
I mean, everybody's had those ideas that you thought, you know, this is going to be so cool, and it's not, or at least the guests don't think so. One of the earliest haunts that we did at Hollow Scream looked great on paper, and in execution was just not successful. And it was one of those. This was our great plan. We had this idea that we were going to take people into this fictional land where they were looking for the hairy man. And it was all this sort of backwoods mythology. And in the middle of this haunt, we were going to break the illusion and say, explain to guests something horrible has happened. We need to escort you out of the house. And then we were going to walk them through the gorilla habitat and have performers in gorilla suits jump out and scare them. we thought this looked great on paper, but boy, did it fail miserably. People just got angry that they weren't getting the full first story. So yeah, there's absolutely times where, you know, along the learning process, you go, ooh, that's probably not good. We also had a situation where we had a full haunted house in a clear span 5,000 square foot tent that got hit by a tornado on opening weekend. So it completely destroyed that entire house. And
oh, crap.
What we did, yeah, it was awful. It was awful. What we did, though, is we were able to salvage some of the scenic. We had another location that was a third the size. And for the so it went down after the first weekend. The second weekend, we took all of the actors, put them on the street, and made it a scare zone. So we basically just kept the performers out there. And then the third weekend, on our map, we did a sign, the sign of, you know, the hurricane sign on the map, and a little dotted line over to the new location and said relocated by, and I don't even remember which hurricane it was. But what we had to do is completely rethink the whole thing using the exact same existing scenic and put it into a space that was significantly smaller. And what we learned from that is bigger is not always better, because after we moved it, it was actually a better haunted experience. But thank God we had a good story, because we were able to just take the bits and pieces and kind of reposition the story as to where it started and where it ended.
That's phenomenal. It's never too late to pull things out of the fire.
Oh, no. One of my favorite quotes is, you give me three good actors and a candle and I'll scare the hell out of you.
I love that.
That should be on a t-shirt.
I'm copywriting it.
Somebody get Chad on the line. We need that t-shirt and logo.
That's perfect.
I just want a finder's fee. That's give me a percentage.
Hang on, I got a quarter there.
Well, yeah, if it's a fee on t-shirt sales, you'll probably owe us money.
That's true.
Oh, damn.
That's true. That's very true.
Scott, are there any websites, social media, Facebook, that type of thing that you'd like to plug right now in our segment called The Plugs?
The plugs. Okay, let me be merciless and shameless. First thing I'd like to do is plug my own. I have my own podcast, which is called A Scott in the Dark. Check it out. You can go to ascottinthedark.com. There's a link directly to it. I'm also part of the Haunted Attractions Network. And if you are a listener or become a listener to A Scott in the Dark, find us on Facebook. We have a very active group that chats about things they hear in the show, things they would like to see in the show. If you are looking for someone as a consultant for anything from haunted attractions to event planning to customer service training, you can go to my website, which is scottswenson.com, pretty basic, scottswenson.com, and check out stuff there. I always keep the folks in my Facebook group up to date. You can also, I also have my own YouTube channel, which is A Scott in the Dark. Just kind of keep out there, because I'm very active on Facebook and Instagram, trying to keep everybody up to date and up to speed on all the projects that I'm working on. I think my next seminar isn't until November. And I will. Oh, yes.
We're echoing.
In IAPA. So.
Definitely want to take the time to thank you for coming on the Big Scary Show. And I had one last question, but...
we'll throw it out.
Okay. What's the future? Has every story been told in the haunt industry?
Not even close. For every person on this planet, there is a new story. And all you got to do is find it. Do we need to be more creative? Yes. Do we need to stop telling the same old stories over and over and over again? Yes.
Thank you.
if you've ever tried to pitch something to either a film studio or a television studio, you know, the old joke is you have to say it's exactly like such and such, only it's done with this, because everybody needs that sense of security. But what is happening now in live theater and in film, and pretty much the world in general, when you break the rules, when you start looking beyond what is safe, you start finding what is interesting. So find those neat stories, find those niche market stories. You know, with haunted attractions, you know, we jokingly earlier said that it's something gone horribly, horribly wrong. But what does that mean? You know, who are the players? How does that invest? How do the guests become invested in that story? Yeah, there are, like I said, as many stories out there as there are stars in the sky. You just got to look for them and nurture them into being.
And they don't all involve clowns and chainsaws, people.
Yeah, but I have a feeling because of, is it the Slender Man or the Slim Man, whatever that movie was?
Slender Man.
Whatever that movie was open over this weekend, I have a feeling that's going to be inundating a lot of haunts if the movie does well.
Well, it'll push Krampus out of the way.
I got nothing against Krampus.
I want to see him incorporate the Meg in some haunts. How about that?
I'm all for that.
Anything other than Sharknado. No offense, Storm. Now we lost Storm.
No, well, I'm here. Weeping
you're
silently.
You're talking about my Sharknado.
Reminded that the last Sharknado is coming.
Thank God.
And on that note, I want to thank again Scott Swenson for being our very special guest star here on the Round Table of Terror, as well as our usual hosts, including Storm.
I'm still working off of that tree imagery earlier. You know, we all know my obscene love of Arbor Day haunts and, you know, just waiting for somebody to really hit on that. And that Christmas tree imagery with the ornaments, I'm there. Something's coming together. You will have my, you know, haunted theme park with the mariachi, you know, Day of the Dead, the, you know, Amish haunted barn, and the haunted tree Arbor Day themed haunt. It'll come one day, and hopefully with some winning Powerball numbers.
Meat Hook Jim.
Even as we talk, I'm trying to get the rest of this damn sex wax off of the Round Table of Terror from Drew's little surfing venture.
You'll have to talk to Wicked Wendy about that. The Haunstrumentalist Jerry Vane.
Damn it, that's what I was going to say. Blame it on Wendy. Wendy, what's up with the sex wax?
Damn right. It was a great weekend. My name is Drew Badger down here in Charlotte, North Carolina. Just remember, no, now I'm going to have to rethink the Amish haunt because our story was going to be Jedediah's Gone Bad. But anyway, you're listening here to the Round Table of Terror here on The Big Scary Show.
He discovered YouTube and all the instant videos. He's gone mad!
You know, if the Amish, thank God they don't like technology. If they listened to our podcast, they'd be pissed.
They'd send the Amish mafia after us.
Oh, God.
They may be your wife, husband, sweetheart.
They're coming to get you.
They may even be your children.
They're coming to get you.
They cannot be exorcised.
They're coming to get you.
The Book of Doomsday foretold their coming. This is their time.
Are you prepared
for the motion picture that proves they're coming to get you? Rated R, under 17, not admitted without parent, from Independent International.
Hello, everybody. Drew Badger. We are live with the Big Scary Show in Charlotte, North Carolina, Days of the Dead. There is a whole big Nightmare on Elm Street Part 3 Dream Warriors reunion going on. This gentleman by the name of Roland Kincaid in the movie survived number 3. I didn't see number 4, so I can't tell you if he lived or not. Maybe he can. Mr. Ken Sagos, how are you, sir?
I'm doing well. How are you?
Excellent. You know, I've seen people coming up and talking to you and getting stuff signed. How do you do the convention circuit very often? I mean, I've not seen you on the scene so far.
I try to do at least one or two a year because I support my nonprofit organization, the Giving Back Corporation.
Excellent. And is that something that is helping the youth, or is it something that helps somebody else? Tell us about the Giving Back Corporation.
Well, it's something about, you know, being Nightmare on Elm Street, and I try to teach the inner city youth to dream, because I was one of those kids that didn't have much, and I promised that I was going to help them get their books and the supplies when they go to school, and also I send kids to camp during the summer. So all the money that I get from my signing, I send it to my corporation, which is a 501c3 nonprofit that I started in 1997.
Wow.
And so far, we have put over 400 kids through college.
Congratulations, sir. That is a very noble pursuit, and that's just awesome. You know, because, you know, you got to give back, first of all. And the fans put you here, and it's just a nice thing to do for the kids, and it's a nice thing to do for the people that come up and say, oh, go God, there's Freddie over there. So we've been, you know, anyway. But is this primarily, well, let me just ask, what made you decide, you know, hey, I'm an actor here, I was in Nightmare on Elm Street 3 and 4, all this cool stuff, but I really need to give back to the community?
Yeah, I've always been that way, because just like you said, giving back. And I realized that I'm where I am because of fans. That's why it's very important to me that I always come out and support my fans, because they support me. It's really the fans that's beneath my wings. That's why I fly like I do. And so, and I try to give back. So, and I try to give back through helping the youth, which is the future.
Right.
And so, and to keep it, just keep it moving.
That's an excellent thing. You've done some TV too. You were in an episode of Twilight Zone. You were on, was it What's Happening Again? Some other TV. How did you like working TV versus movies? Which one's better? Which one's harder, easier, etc.?
Well, it, because I like what I do, it's not a which one is better, which one is this. I really enjoy what I'm doing. And I'm also a writer. I used to be a staff writer for Paramount. I have an Emmy for writing a Disney film.
Congratulations.
So, and I continue to write. I've written over 50 screenplays, and I've written some stage plays as well.
When you come out and do the con scene like this, is it primarily with your fellow Nightmare on Elm Street fans when they do like a reunion show, or do you come out on your own?
Both. Sometimes I go out on my own, and sometimes I go out for the reunion. I like the reunions because we get a chance to come back together, all of us again. You know, it's funny because when we was doing the film, we was like young, but now it's like we're antiques.
You're my age, so when that came out in the mid-80s, I know about how old you were. We won't talk ages, but yeah.
My son is here now, so he will be able to play the age that I was playing.
Oh, then hadn't thought of that. Does he think you're a cool dad for doing all that?
Well, that's him right there.
Oh,
so
okay.
I don't know. I think so, not all the time, because I'm not cool.
I have three teenagers. Dad is definitely not cool at my house, but you know.
Oh, no, they're not. Sometimes I'm a nightmare. You have to go Freddy on their ass and get them to do what they're supposed to do.
Do you, like, secretly have a glove somewhere in a cabinet and you're going to break that out if he gets out of line?
I don't, but they think I do.
That's fantastic. For people wanting more information on the Giving Back Corporation, is there a website or social media where people can follow that, maybe make a donation or get more information?
Yes, if you just go in and just make a donation, because I really, really do need the donation, because I'm paying for kids' books all over the United States every year, every semester. And if you go to, just type in Ken Sagos Giving Back Corporation, my name will come up. Or go to Facebook me, and ask about it. And you can go to the website at www.gbc-givingbackcorporation.com, and that's me. And I started in 97.
Very nice. So 21 years of helping put the kids through school. My gosh, some of those kids are going to start having kids before too long, because they're about ready to get out of school themselves. So, Ken Sagos, it's an absolute pleasure. Go look him up on Facebook. It's Ken, Sagoes.
To remember, what you say matters, but what Ken say goes.
I'm going to look at that. That does, too. So, once again, I'm going to let you get back to your fans here who are checking out all this cool stuff. Remember, gbc-givingbackcorporation.com helps the inner city youth, helps the youth all across the country, school books, putting them through college, very noble cause. Ken Sagos, a pleasure to have you here on The Big Scary Show.
Thank you so much.
Once again, Drew Badger here at Days of the Dead in Charlotte, and we are out.
Ready to dress up your show? Need to pump new life into old props? Just want to show something no one else has? Do what Alice Cooper, Distortions Unlimited, and A-list haunters all over the world do. Wear Von Karon. Durable, handcrafted, dependable year after year. Von Karon. When you scare enough to wear the very best. VonKaron.com. VonKaron.com.
Greetings, listeners, and welcome. Watch out, don't trip over that torso. It's time for Between the Corpses.
Greetings, haunters. Meat Hook Jim here. A little under the weather, but the show must go on. On this edition of Between the Corpses, I'm going to talk about my favorite dark ride, and I'm sure quite a few of you out there, the Haunted Mansion at Walt Disney World. And the information I have comes from a book called The Hidden Magic of Walt Disney World by Susan Vaness. You know, some things I knew about in this book, some things I didn't. So I thought I'd share some of this little hidden secret stuff that may or may not catch your attention. For starters, the first greets you ominously even before you set foot on the property. As you pass through the gates, look at the center section. Your first indication all is not right is this creepy country manor, the outline of a bat-like creature placed within the ironwork for all eternity. The mansion itself is a fascinating structure, steeped in murder, mystery, and just a bit of whimsy, right to the rooftop. When you're walking up there, do you notice the ornamental stone pieces along the roof line look oddly familiar? Upon closer inspection, you'll notice they look a lot like rooks, pawns, kings, and queens. Claude Coates, creator of the Haunted Mansion's architecture, was said to be a true chess buff, so perhaps he put his signature on the roof. Disney officials insist they are not chess pieces, but now you have seen them, so you be the judge. Next, ask a cast member to tell you the story of Madame Leota's ring, and you will either get a detailed rendition or a stony look and a curt, there is no such ring. After a 2007 refurbishment of the Haunted Mansion, the latter statement became the correct answer, sort of. The bridal ring story had many variations, all of which revolve around Master Gracie, the owner of Gracie Manor, the proper name of the Haunted Mansion, and his forlorn bride Leota, whose likeness can be seen throughout your journey. Look for her in the crystal ball, in the attic wearing her wedding dress, and at the end of the attraction as she bids you farewell. Master Gracie, of course, can be seen hanging by his neck from the ceiling rafters in the stretch room when the lights go out, and since the 2007 update and various photographs in the attic. There are many versions of how Leota died and how her wedding ring became embedded in the cement outside the exit of the Haunted Mansion, but the fact is the ring wasn't a ring at all. It was the trimmed-off end of a metal post that was once used in that area and could not be completely removed. A small metal bit that looked like the diamond was the tip of a tool that broke off when a maintenance crew member tried to pry the remnants of the post out of the ground. The only really strange fact here is that despite what any cast member may tell you, and some have developed some really elaborate fables, originally there was no backstory to the Haunted Mansion either. For all its wonderful creativity, the Imagineers never developed a full theme around Master Gracie and Madame Leota. So we were left to our own imagination as to what really happened to the tragic ghostly bride. As you walk through the canopied part of the line, notice the eerie shape of the pillars on either side of the front door. Perhaps these are two coffins left for future occupants, which in itself is pretty creepy. The mansion itself is always a bit spooky, but even more so at night. Once the sun goes down, take a look towards the top story window above the front door. If you look up at just the right moment, you'll see what happens to be a ghostly figure passing by. As you're working your way through the graveyard, you'll come across Madame Leota's headstone, which is the most dramatic in the graveyard. Just before you go through the front door, look at the large tombstone to your left, where Leota's beautiful face is carved into her headstone. But wait, because while you're busy looking at her likeness, she may just wake up and look at you. And a little bit of trivia about Madame Leota. Leota was a real person. Leota Toombs worked at the modeling department at Disneyland, California. Walt Disney once told her she had the perfect face for the Haunted Mansion, but meant it as a compliment. She was a beautiful woman. It is her face you see in the crystal ball, but her voice was dubbed by Eleanor Audley, who voiced Maleficent in Sleeping Beauty. Once you get into the Haunted Mansion and you're in the stretch room and it goes to the pre-show, let everybody move out before you. Take your time. You might just hear the gargoyles on the wall talking. If you listen closely, you can hear them say, "Stay together," against a background of obscure mumblings. Keep listening and you will also hear the stretch room stretching. When you exit, look at the moldings around the doors in the waiting area and throughout the Haunted Mansion. The top corner moldings are in the shape of stylized skulls. Yay, skulls. When you enter your doom buggy, you are, of course, greeted by the ghost host. His voice sounds familiar, especially if you're a little long in the tooth. It is not Orson Welles, however. It is voice actor Paul Frees, who has a vast resume and has voiced some famous characters such as Ludwig von Drake, Boris Badenoff.
Allow me to introduce myself, Boris Badenoff, at your service.
From Rocky and Bullwinkle, and yes, even the Pillsbury Doughboy. As you make your way through the Haunted Mansion in your doom buggy, you'll see various scenes such as the storms and the thunderclaps and the 13-hour clock with the twigs that are swinging in front of it until you realize they're gnarled hands with fingernails. And if you have a sharp eye, you'll see a shadow of a ghostly hand passing over the face of the clock more than once. Although you cannot read it from the ride on the doom buggy, the sheet music on the floor in the piano room reads, "Et cum spirituo," meaning "as with your spirit," and the composer's vocal instruction, "bol en muen ne," is scattered across the left-hand page. The right-hand sheet has no words, only staff lines. Has the unfinished work doomed its composer to play for all eternity? If you look at the floor quickly as you pass by the piano, you can see the shadow of the composer as he plays. As you get to the ballroom scene, you will see a replica of the pipe organ used in the film 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea. It's a great example of recycling, reusing, refurbishing, as the original movie prop found its own second life in Disneyland's Haunted Mansion. As you enter the graveyard section of the ride, notice not only the worried look on the face of the caretaker, but also the direction of his gaze. He isn't afraid of something he sees beyond you, he's looking directly at you. You have symbolically become the 1,000th ghost. The caretaker's dog isn't looking well either, though he does look familiar. It is said Walt had a dog he was particularly fond of, and his memory lives on in Rover, who makes an appearance here in the graveyard, in the Carousel of Progress, and dangling the prison keys at the end of the Pirates of the Caribbean. As you pass by the singing statues, one voice may catch your attention, and most of you will recognize it as the voice of Tony the Tiger.
They're great!
That's Thurl Ravenscroft, who also sang the song "You're a Mean One, Mr. Grinch."
You're a mean one, Mr. Grinch.
When you reach the end of the graveyard scene, you can't help but notice the Viking woman. Can you guess why she was placed in this particular spot? Because it's not over until the fat lady sings. Now she has sung and your ride is almost over. The real Madame Leota can be heard in the Haunted Mansion. Although Walt felt her voice was too high-pitched and childlike for spooky sounds he desired in the crystal ball, her voice is heard right at the end of your ride. The mini Leota figure above the final door before you exit your doom buggy urges you to hurry back, hurry back. But there are two more secrets before you depart the grounds. As you exit, look to your left. The crypts have names carved into them. Bid a fond farewell to Asher T. Ashes, Haparition, Clairvoyance, and others. Farther along, you'll find the dearly departed faithful friends in the pet cemetery. The demise of Mr. Toad's Wild Ride, a Fantasyland classic, is honored in the pet cemetery. Look toward the far left corner in the back of the cemetery, and you will see a statue of Mr. Toad from Wind in the Willows. Well, that's it. Those are some secrets and not-so-secret secrets about Walt Disney World's Haunted Mansion. I want to thank Susan Vaness, the author of The Hidden Magic of Walt Disney World, for some fascinating insight into parts of the ride that I didn't know and other parts I did. So I hope you enjoyed this edition of Between the Corpses, and we will catch you on the next one.
The Independence, Bloody Night, Bloody Knife, on the Big Scary Show.
A little story about a prom queen, no one. She was she supposed to be. Well, sure, she kinda came home with me that night. But I know it's a trip taking her life. Well, she kinda got that line. And with a flash of my switchblade knife, I knew she'd always, always be mine. She came into my bedroom, looked around, and she was sure that she deserves to be a little way. And that's what happened. Well, I should have said, bloody night.
Again, Frighteners, welcome to yet another edition of the Vicer's Haunted Vista. Here we are in mid-August, a scant 2 weeks away from Labor Day weekend, and you all know what that means, don't you?
A naked American man stole my balloon.
Yeah, not quite.
Everyone's got a gimmick now.
That may be, but what I'm referring to is the opening of several major, major haunted house attractions across the country. Halloween season is closer than it's ever been, kiddies. Isn't that wonderful?
Ooh, ooh, hey, wow. Ooh, wow.
Before before we get all rolling on that and all start going stark slavering buggo, after all, my wife and I start setting up our own home haunt on Labor Day weekend itself, this is the second of my three of my fourth anniversary on the Big Scary Show segments. Yeah. Your enthusiasm is greatly appreciated. Regardless of all of that, as I said last time, I intended to do something special with the three segments that are available to me in August, and this one is no exception. I had quite a few things on the table, which I will mention later on in the show, but for now we're going to begin a discussion of the great giant monster movies of the 1950s and the influence they all had upon horror and haunting culture. Obviously, giant monsters have been around almost as long as horror cinema has been around itself. We really cannot start a serious discussion of this without mentioning first and foremost the 1933 classic of King Kong. Kong was brought to life, as most people know by now, by a lot of painstaking, heart-wrenching stop-motion photography. Willis O'Brien's artistry in this film is amazing for its time period, and it set the standard for a lot of things to come regarding this type of cinema. Kong is obviously one of the major forerunners, as was Son of Kong a couple of years after that, and I have to make special mention of Mighty Joe Young as well, but there really wasn't a prevalence of this sort of creature feature up until the 1950s, and this was predated, obviously, by the dropping of the atomic bomb on both the cities of Hiroshima and Nagasaki, Japan, in 1945. The atomic bomb was a game changer in many, many ways, and not just in terms of world relations, but also in terms of the social consciousness and the entertainment fields themselves as well. I'm not going to go into the sociological aspects of it, obviously, that would be for something quite different than this podcast, but plain and simple, the atomic bomb scared the world halfway to death. Never had such destructive power ever been seen ever before, and quite frankly, I think the planet had a nervous breakdown out of the possibilities that this weapon could achieve. In terms of horror cinema, it blew away the gothic trappings of the Universal monsters and all their ilk, like Dracula, Frankenstein, and the Wolfman. The atomic bomb brought on fears of giant mutated creatures, not to mention invaders from other planets, and other threats of science gone horribly wrong. We'll touch on those other last two points in future segments, but for now we're going to concentrate on the giant monsters. Starting off here at home, we had a slew of these kind of films all through the course of the 1950s and well into the 1960s, but I'm going to stick with one decade for now. One of the most fondly remembered and best executed was the 1954 film Them. Set in the deserts of New Mexico, it focused upon the military and scientific community's efforts to deal with a colony of huge, radioactively mutated ants. By today's standards, the film is obviously quite dated. The ants, however, are executed very nicely, and the chirping sound they make is still unnerving, even at 2018 standards. The script is well written, and the film is paced at a very breakneck speed for the 50s, and the scares are genuine. The sound the ants make, that distinctive chirping noise that they're all so well remembered for, still gives me the willies up until this day. And needless to say, the film was a big success and unleashed an army of big bug movies, including Tarantula, The Deadly Mantis, Earth vs. the Spider, and most notoriously for its distinctive cheapness, The Beginning of the End, which focused on an army of oversized, radioactively mutated locusts invading the Chicagoland and outlying areas. I mean, this film was so cheap, they would film grasshoppers crawling over pictures. I repeat, pictures of local Chicago architecture at the time. And the cheapness didn't start there. We had the giant Gila monsters featuring none other than a giant Gila monster chasing around a bunch of kids in hot rods till it's dispatched by one smart-thinking Steve McQueen lookalike. And then there was the attack of the crab monsters, which featured radioactively mutated crabs with psychic abilities and really poor special effects done on the cheap by none other than Mr. Roger Corman himself. And I think the killer of them all was the giant claw featuring featuring one of the cheapest-looking giant big birds I've ever seen. A distinct ripoff of Rodan, but more on him in a minute. But in terms of just sheer cheese and cheapness and tastelessness, the giant claw really topped them all. This kind of film is a thing that, and has been, mocked by MST 3000, and justifiably so. If you haven't seen this, go check it out. It's worth a good giggle.
Oh, why don't you just give up?
On the flip side of the quality meter, we have to make special mention of Ray Harryhausen and his stop-motion genius in films like Beast from 20,000 Fathoms, It Came from Beneath the Sea, and 20 Million Miles to Earth. Granted, kids may snicker at this sort of thing nowadays, but Harryhausen was really the name of the game, and he went on to do so many things in the 60s and 70s, including the Sinbad films and many other science fiction and horror films too long to mention, which just is a testimony to his genius. The painstaking effort that went into bringing things to life like the octopus in It Came from Beneath the Sea, the Ymir of 20 Million Miles to Earth, and in particular, the brilliantly executed Retosaurus from Beast from 20,000 Fathoms, which, again, may seem dated by today's standards, but don't forget, these animations were done frame by frame over a painstakingly detailed amount of time, and their importance to the genre should not be diminished or ignored. And this type of animation is seen in very direct fashion in two of Mexico's best giant monster films, The Black Scorpion and Kronos. The Black Scorpion stands as your standard giant monster on the loose type fare, with some really, really sharp animation to it, but Kronos is a horse of another color. The basic plot focusing in on an alien technological parasite hell-bent on sucking our world dry of all of its electrical energy. This is a smart flick and well worth looking into if you have the chance. It was produced in 1957 and is a cross-American-Mexican production, but the effects are stellar for the time, and the plot and dialogue and pacing are well worth watching. A very rare gem for both this time period and this genre. England got in on the act as well in the 1950s with their ripoff of King Kong, simply titled Konga, mixing equal parts Frankenstein science fiction touches and giant monster on the loose, which unfortunately doesn't happen till like the last 10-15 minutes. This basically is kind of a sci-fi monster movie hybrid mishmash, which has mixed results to say the very least. England was to do a bit better a few years later with a film called Gorgo, but that's a topic for another time. And this brings us to the land of the rising sun, the only country in the world who ever experienced the horror of the atomic bomb itself, and which gave birth to a herd of giant monsters, led off by none other than the 1954 release of Godzilla.
No more! I'm sick of Godzilla!
And I'm quite certain quite a few of the Big Scary Show listeners are as well, as many times as I've featured him on my segment here. But mentioning in passing both Godzilla and Godzilla Raids Again during the late 50s, Toho gave birth to quite a few giant monsters, most of which would show up in the 1960s, but two bear mentioning, the first being 1956 Rodan. Now, I'm not going to go into this. Obviously, most people know this film centers around a pair of giant pterodactyls, which are radioactively mutated, and the usual chaos ensues when they're freed from their volcanic prison somewhere around Mount Fuji. Essentially Godzilla with wings, this film has a slightly less harsh tone than Godzilla did, with a slightly more sympathetic look towards the monsters. Rodan obviously became a big member of the Toho cast of characters, but again, I think we all know that story too. Also worthy of mention is Varan the Unbelievable. A black and white cult favorite among Godzilla kaiju fans, this features a kind of reptilian flying squirrel. You figure it out, I sure can't. But an American distributor got a hold of this thing and absolutely butchered the film a la the original Godzilla when it got here in American hands and they inserted all the Raymond Burr scenes. But if you have the opportunity, check out the Japanese original, simply titled Giant Monster Varan. It's called Varan here in America. Don't ask me. And while not the best Toho ever had to offer, it is a cult favorite, and the character of Varan is much beloved in kaiju fan circles. As I mentioned, Toho would go on to produce monster film after monster film after monster film to great success during the course of the 1960s, but once again, this is a topic for discussion for another segment. The influence these films had is obvious. Even more B-list films like The Blob and The Amazing Colossal Man had reverberations well into the 80s and 90s, especially The Blob, which had a remake in 1988, full gore and goo notwithstanding. But if you just take a look at modern cinema nowadays, Cloverfield, several remakes on Godzilla, several Kong remakes over the decades. These films strike a resonant chord even with audiences today, as sophisticated as they can be with CGI technology infiltrating every aspect of the movies. Several examples being the upcoming May 2019 Godzilla King of the Monsters, a third planned installment in the Pacific Rim series, not to mention a possible fourth film in the Cloverfield series. Giant monsters hit a chord with people, and I think it has a lot to do with just being a kid sitting in front of the TV growing up back in the 60s and 70s, munching on Captain Crunch and watching Double Creature Feature and things like that. There's something about giant monsters that's much beloved in worldwide cultures and in horror cinema, and there's all kinds of reasons that psychologists like to discuss about this sort of thing. But me personally, I just feel like it's a big, big, warm, nostalgic hug back to a childhood memory that is held so beloved, as I just mentioned, of sitting in front of the TV, taking all these cheesy films in, and all these filmmakers who must have done likewise, because the proliferation of this kind of movie is just too big to poo-poo away. And really, why would you want to? Long live Godzilla and crew and everyone who came before him. I think they're going to be here for many years to come. Comments, critiques, suggestions, look me up on Facebook. I go under Eric Weister, or drop me a line at erweister, V-Y-S-T-H-E-R, at woh.rr.com. I answer both, but you're going to stand a better chance of reaching me on Facebook, but I will get back to you sooner or later. Either way, I answer all correspondence. Also, check out my Blogspot page, the Weister's Halloween Haunt Journal, filled with views, news, and reviews that you can use. Say that three times fast, because I certainly can't. There's going to be a major update to that very, very soon, but I'll get to that in a moment. Next time on the Vista, a bit more personal and introspective piece. 2018 marks both 4 years with The Big Scary Show and also 4 years that my wife Lisa and I spent acting professionally in several haunted attractions. And that's a long time in either case, and has led to many experiences, both good and bad, and some thoughts, observations, and even possibly some wisdom that I've gleaned in the years in both areas. During the course of September, I'm going to be doing a special look into Mall Traveling Haunters League, and they will feature also on a corresponding page on the Weister's Halloween Haunt Journal as well. Bringing this to a conclusion, I did want to say once again thank you to all the listeners who have been so gracious, accepting, and warm and kind with their comments and thoughts and ideas towards the last 4 years I've been on here, and a special shout-out to Drew, Jim, Storm, and Jerry for tolerating me for so long and giving me such free rein and creative freedom. It is greatly appreciated, gentlemen. So, until next time, always remember Sven Gulli's credo and brush your fangs, comb your face, drink your milk before it clots, bite mama goodnight, and always remember, I hid the body because, well, plain and simple, I just don't know anything funny to say at this point.
Stand down now.
And your wish is my command. See everybody again in 2 weeks. Take care until then.
Welcome back to Insanity Hall. Demented Argogo on the Big Scary Show.
Welcome back to Insanity Hall. Once you're in there, the gates are closed. You can't struggle, you can't fight. Once you're in there, there's no getting out. Staring at the moonlight from rusty iron bars. I'm going madness when the mind is in the stars. Dr. Gestation is my manipulation. Why you an insane? It's only you who knows. Climbing up the walls, crawling at the doors. No way out.
haunted house owners, actors, and enthusiasts. Join the new Ohio Haunters Association. We are working with haunters across the state, from home to pro, to strengthen the Ohio haunt community. Open to all owners, actors, makeup artists, prop builders, designers, and Halloween paranormal enthusiasts. The Ohio Haunters Association, where haunting is the heart of it all. Look for us on Facebook. As we slide back into the swamp where we hid the body, we would like to thank the following sponsors: Screamline Studios, Dark Imaginings, Von Caron Productions, Haunt Pay, Ticket Leap, and Creepy Collection. We would also like to thank Virgil Franklin, Master of the Ether Muse, as well as the Fordga hosts, including Storm, Rants and More, HauntMinute.com, The Unknown Scare Actor, Actor Trainer and Traveling Actor Troupe. For more information, check out MaulMonsters.com. That's MaulMonsters.com. Drew Badger, Actor Trainer and Consultant. Find out more at RabidBadger.org. And Jerry Vane, the Hauntstrumentalist, for all your heavy metal and haunt needs. JerryVane.com. And finally, you, the listener. Without you, we are nothing.
The Big Scary Show is copyright Big Scary Show, LLC, and no rebroadcast of this show may be made without express permission of the owners. All music used on The Big Scary Show is used with expressed permission of the artists themselves.